Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Issue 17. Whatever happened to poverty? Say what you will about John Edwards' personal life. He was the candidate of poverty, elevating it to the central position in his campaign for president. Here is Edwards on this show this summer.
Poverty is still very serious in a country of our wealth. We have, according to the federal government's definition, about 37 million people who fall below the poverty line. People who saw what happened in New Orleans when the hurricane hit there, particularly in the Ninth Ward, saw sort of the personification of poverty in America.
Now, it's hard to find the word poverty on the lips of Obama and McCain, even as they repeatedly say banks and credit and Wall Street and 401ks. But we don't want to ignore it here. So poverty is issue 17 in our presidential election series, 30 issues in 30 days. We won't ignore it, even if everyone else does. Our first guest on this is Sheena Rudolph, who is one of those one in four referred to by a new report today, out today from the Working Poor Families Project. It says one in every four families with children is low income in this country. Sheena Rudolph is a working mother of five who is currently in the welfare system, and she's here to talk to us about her experience as well as to represent the activist group Community Voices Heard. Thank you very much for coming into WNYC.
Thank you for having me.
Give us a little background about yourself. Tell us about your life. You consider yourself poor? Do you use that word? How do you support yourself?
Well, I would consider myself low income, considering what America consists of high income. I was working. I've worked most of my life. I had a good job. Unfortunately, I had kids, and that allowed me to be on public assistance at that time. Throughout that, I fell on hard times, meaning I had to collect public assistance, and trying to build myself back up, I decided to start my own business. At that time, it didn't go anywhere just because the income was not coming in to support that. So as of right now, my children are receiving SSI and child support, and that's how I currently live.
SSI is disability, so, right?
Yes, disability. I have twins that are disabled, and they take occupational therapy and speech therapy.
And are you also on welfare as we know it?
Welfare is, no, I'm not. I'm trying to at least try to get myself above poverty level, which is I have the income that I currently have is what I have. I'm trying to basically improve my life and start my own business to try and have a clothesline. But as of right now, I'm trying to sell some paintings so I could be able to get money, so I could be able to take care of my family. I also have Medicaid. Medicaid is something that do not cover a lot of insurance. It's a lot of things that's on the insurance, like teeth, certain things that you have to fix. I have over $30,000 worth of work that I have to get done.
Medicaid, which is health insurance for the poor, does not include dental.
No, it does, but a certain part you have to pay.
Have you been watching all this news about the financial crisis?
Yes.
Do you feel that it affects you directly?
Oh, yes, definitely. Also trying to be able to get a bank loan. You can't now because everything is on froze. But at the same time, trying to just make ends meet. In general, food prices are going up. You can't be able to afford to buy toiletries or even get a haircut or continue doing what you normally do regarding your kids and after-school programs or trips for them. Money is very tight and getting hard.
You told one of our producers that, in your opinion, the welfare system breeds a negative mentality. Talk a little bit more about that.
Well, the welfare system, they try to hold you down when I think it's really a step up, where if you apply it to your life and you get what you can out of it, if they're helping you pay some of your rent, they give you food stamps, they help you with medical assistance, all of that is a help up. All you need a chance to do is get a good job. If you don't have the job itself, try to get the education that you need to get the job. And then you'll be able to get yourself a little above poverty. Your family can also be proud of you of making initiative in the economy itself.
So did you earlier in your life use the aid to families with dependent children welfare?
Yes, I have.
Did you use up your 5-year limit that's under the current law since 1996?
Well, unfortunately, at that time, I had twins that allowed me not to be able to continue working as in WEP as we knew it, because it was both of my kids were sick at that time, so I had to be home more than be out of the house. And continue going to these programs, they don't help you. But if you can apply yourself to where you stand at in life, if I had a secretarial background, I would like to go in there and try to get secretarial training and improve myself, not go in there and do a WEP job, sweeping the streets, or doing sanitation work.
So do you think that in your case, and I understand you said you couldn't do the WEP jobs, was it good? Does it need changes? Did it boost you up? Did it drag you down?
Well, it can definitely pull you back down, because part of WEP is also try to get transitional benefits. And once you are in the program, like the Parks Department, they allow you to just work there, but you cannot use a WEP job on application on a resume, on a new application, and applying for a job, because they don't look at it as in real work.
You could write it down, but you say it's not perceived as real
work. No, it's really
work.
Like volunteer work, and I don't think you should be doing that for volunteer pay.
So you think that the idea behind workfare, which is that it at least builds, you know, the habit of going to work every day, it builds the image of responsibility by going to work every day in the eyes of future employers, that doesn't hold up for you?
Not really, because if you're not getting paid for the person, you're not getting paid to do that job, right. And the person next to you is getting paid.
Although you're getting paid your benefits in those cases.
Benefits,
right?
Is what, $68.50 every month? That's not money. That's not even enough to buy toiletries.
What else besides welfare does the policy sector need to be talking about, in your opinion, when addressing poverty in America?
They need to start talking about health insurance, which right now they're doing a lot of cutbacks. Senior citizens cannot be able to afford to get their medication that they need to survive. They're not talking about after-school program for children, even with disability, or after-school programs in general. They're cutting those.
Now, it's interesting that you mention those, because the two groups of people who are covered by government insurance in America are people who are poor enough for Medicaid, and people who are elderly who qualify for Medicare.
This is true. So why are they cutting their benefits? Where I know now a lot of senior citizens that cannot get their medication because of the prescription they have is being cut.
Some people will say personal responsibility needs to be discussed also when talking about poverty. Some would say not having five kids if you can't afford to raise the first ones, things like that. How do you react to that talk?
What I would say, that also go back to part of Bush's plan as far as in marriage initiatives. When he mentioned that in 2006, I disagree with that also, because they tell you to marry your kid's father, and I thought that was incorrect. Unfortunately, my kid's father was already married, the answer to that question, out of a 10-year relationship. So I would not be able to be a bigamist. So I had to take care of myself, my kids myself, and that's what I did, and I went out and got the job and worked.
Here's a clip of Barack Obama talking about poverty and responsibility at the NAACP conference this summer.
No matter how much money we invest in our communities, how many 10-point plans we propose, how many government programs we launch, none of it will make a difference, at least not enough of a difference, if we also, at the same time, don't seize more responsibility in our own lives.
Does it make you angry to hear Barack Obama talk like that?
No, he's just really stating his opinion, his facts, and things that he's planning on changing. But at the same time, the politicians need to really talk about real change, not change for the middle class that's making $250,000 a year. Talk about the poorer class or the less fortunate, more like the homeless people. You're not even talking about cleaning up the streets with the people and putting them in public housing. They're talking about building public housing and affordable housing, but it's not affordable to low-income people.
What, in your opinion, do Obama and McCain need to hear from poor people themselves?
They need to walk in poor people's shoes, low-income people's shoes. I try to not to use that word poor, because that's this classification of a mind frame. And I think if people was to get out of that mentality, they'll be able to build themselves up against poverty. Poverty is just a state of mind. You need to improve yourself with that and try to, like Obama and McCain, need to come and look at the Brooklyn, New York, the Bronx, and see how, since it's such a low-class area, You need to build that up. What are you going to do to start that? Come there, take a walk through the neighborhood, look at the situations as far as public housing, as far as education, as far as home health aid care for senior citizen, and try to make a change within the communities. And that's what I try to do, working with Community Voices Heard, try to change the laws that affect the people's lives.
How about housing? What's on top of Community Voices Heard's housing agenda?
Well, housing, as of right now, we have a good policy. We just want some money back into the NYCHA's budget for them to improve it.
That's the public housing projects in New York City.
Yes, and we're trying to aware people more. And as far as the election right now, what's important to us on our list is getting the voters out to vote for the people who they think is who think that they have their issue on their platform.
And you said you didn't like to use the word poor because that represents a mindset. Talk
yes.
a little more about that.
My mindset, even though I am not currently working, I'm currently not on public assistance. I currently cannot afford to take care of a lot of things that I do want in life, but my mindset is still I can achieve and believe in what I am and who I am, and not just because I live in the projects don't mean I'm of the projects. I can be able to build myself up, and good things do come from the hood.
And so what terms do you prefer to use other than poor?
I would say right now I'm temporarily out of cash.
Temporarily out of cash.
Yes.
That's a good way to look at it because it means you think you're going to have cash in the future.
Yes, I'm planning. That's my mindset, and I'm planning on reaching. I'm not going to let life live me. I'm going to live my life.
Sheena Rudolph, New Yorker, temporarily out of cash, and with Community Voices Heard. Thank you very much for coming
Thank
in.
You for having me.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, 30 Issues in 30 Days, Issue 17, Whatever Happened to Poverty as an Issue in the Campaign. Next, we will hear some of McCain and Obama's words, some of the few they've spoken in this campaign on poverty, and compare their platforms. Stay with us. Issues in 30 Days, Issue 17, Whatever Happened to Poverty as an Issue in the Campaign. We'll talk to two guests in a minute. We want to play clips. We searched long and hard to find clips of Obama and McCain even uttering the word poverty or addressing the issue directly. And we found clips of each of them when they addressed the NAACP convention this summer. Here is a little bit of each.
There was a time when economists took little, if any, notice at all of the poverty of black communities. Even in times of general economic growth, many lived in a perpetual recession, and the jobs available didn't promise much upward mobility. Our country still has a lot of progress to make on this score. But with 1.2 million businesses today owned and operated by African Americans, more and more are no longer just spectators on the prosperity of our country. They are stakeholders.
When any human being is denied a life of dignity and respect, no matter whether they live in Anacostia or Appalachia or in a village in Africa, when people are trapped in extreme poverty, we know how to curb, or are suffering from diseases that we know how to prevent, when they're going without the medicines that they so desperately need, then we have more work to do. That's what this election's about. It's about the responsibilities we all share for the future we hold in common.
So Barack Obama and John McCain at the NAACP conference this summer. Joining me now, Andre Cherney, former senior advisor to Senator Kerry's presidential campaign in 2004, platform director for Al Gore's campaign in 2000, and co-editor these days of Democracy, a Journal of Ideas. And Stephen Moore, financial columnist for National Review, senior economics writer for The Wall Street Journal, and the author of a new book called The End of Prosperity. Thanks to both of you for coming on this morning. Hello. And first, let me get both your takes on whether the financial crisis that we've been obsessing on for the last month, changes the terms of the debate on poverty in America. Andre Czerny, is this credit and banking meltdown relevant to fighting poverty in America, or is it something wholly separate?
Well, I think they are going to be seen and will increasingly be in reality part of the same cloth. Unfortunately, one of the side effects I'm sure we're going to see out of what's going to happen so far and what is going to happen over the next months and perhaps even years is an increase in poverty across the board here in the United States, and that'll certainly make these issues more salient. But of course, poverty can't just be seen as something completely separate from the larger economic issues we're dealing with. It's all part of a spectrum, and whether a family is on the far end of the spectrum or farther along in what we call the struggling middle class, these issues are universal.
Stephen Moore, same question. Does this credit and banking crisis have direct relevance to fighting poverty in America, or is it maybe a distraction from it?
No, I think I agree. I think it does have a direct connection, and I think that what you see is just as wealth flows down during periods of growth, when we have a tough period of economic time like we do now, that starts with people at the very top, and it flows down to middle class and lower income people. And so I agree with Andrew that I think if this crisis persists, we probably, unfortunately, will see an increase in poverty levels and an increase in unemployment.
And we can take phone calls on Obama, McCain, and anti-poverty policy at 212-433-WNYC. 212-433-9692. You know, we get a lot of comments, or we have over the last month, from people who say, you know, all this effort to save the banking system, it doesn't have anything to do with me. I'm poor. I'm a working class person. Stop focusing on the bankers and get back to policies like health care and education and things that have to do with me. This is going to take money away from me. Do you still feel that way, folks? And talking specifically about fighting poverty in America, whether this relates to you personally or whether you just have a thought about it at the policy level, give us a call, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or post your comments to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Andre, does Barack Obama have an anti-poverty platform as opposed to policies to strengthen the middle class, or have those two categories merged in a way?
I think the answer is yes on both fronts. One of the political lessons, as well as from a campaign standpoint, as well as from a larger governance standpoint, that I think that Democrats have learned over the past generation, is that you can't really separate out the issues of the poor from those affecting working people and the middle class at large. And so I think a lot of what he says that will be helping poor families is also something that helps a larger number of families as well. That's things like making tax credits refundable and not just going to those who are already paying income taxes and itemizing and things like that. But he also, separately from that, does have a pretty innovative approach to fighting poverty. One really actually based on something there in New York, what Jeffrey Canada has done with the Harlem Children's Zone, and really the idea of taking that approach, that holistic approach to dealing with all the issues affecting poor families and affecting people who are trapped in a cycle of poverty, the cultural issues as well as the economic issues, taking that approach nationally.
So take me further on that. When I look at Obama's issue page on the website, I'm seeing civil rights, defense, disabilities, economy, education, energy, ethics, faith and family, fiscal, foreign policy, health care, homeland security, immigration, Iraq. And there is a poverty platform. You can see it on the website, but we don't ever hear about it from Barack Obama. So what are we missing, and why doesn't he talk about it?
That's always frustration people have in presidential campaigns. First of all, if you actually do listen to what he talks about in all his speeches, he does talk about these issues. It hasn't been a centerpiece because there's also issues like Iraq and the financial meltdown and health care and all these other issues. But again, when he's talking about issues like what is happening in the economy, when he's talking about health care, when he's talking about things like the minimum wage and the earned income tax credit, he is, whether he utters the word poor or utters the word poverty, mm-hmm. he's talking about these very families. Mm-hmm. I mean, these are the people who are out there without health insurance. These are the people who would benefit from having an earned income tax credit. These are the people who would benefit from all of the other things that he's talking about in terms of having an economic approach that works from the bottom up, not just from the top down.
Stephen Moore, I'm going to tick off some of the main things on the Obama website poverty platform page. And you tell me if, from your perspective, this adds up to the kind of anti-poverty effort that you would support. The first thing that he lists is help Americans grab a hold of and climb the job ladder. And it says Obama and Biden will invest $1 billion over 5 years in transitional jobs and career pathway programs that implement proven methods of helping low-income Americans succeed in the workforce. Then it goes on to create a green jobs corps, improve transportation access to jobs, reduce crime recidivism by providing ex-offender job supports. We know about expanding the earned income tax credit. That's giving more money to people who work but don't earn enough to pay income taxes. Raise the minimum wage to $9.50 an hour by 2011, plus strengthening families, promoting responsible fatherhood, supporting parents with young children, and then also expand paid sick days. So does that sound like an anti-poverty program that a Stephen Moore conservative could support?
Well, I like the idea of, the earned income credit. When we put that in place about 10, 15 years ago, it actually has helped reduce poverty. And the reason a lot of conservatives like that program, Brian, is that it's work. It's related to work. You get the benefit if you work, so it doesn't have the work disincentive effects that traditional welfare did. I strongly object to the idea of raising the minimum wage. I think that raising the minimum wage destroys jobs at the bottom, and what the research shows, I think, is that it just knocks the bottom rungs off of the bottom of the economic ladder so people can't climb up it. But this idea that, by the way, the most important thing that he talks about there, Brian, and I think the research on poverty really shows how important this is, it's very clear that most families that are in poverty come from families that are broken, where that you don't have a husband and a wife living at home with the kids. And family breakup today is one of the major causes of poverty in America.
So, Andre, let me turn to you. How much common ground between you and the Obama platform and between you and Stephen Moore?
I think there's a lot of common ground out there. There has been, over the course of the past 20 years or so, something developing of a consensus about how we fight poverty in the United States. And it has to do with the fact that there is certainly the economic aspect of poverty, but there is, as Stephen was just saying, also the cultural aspects. Dealing with keeping families that are able to be together is incredibly important. So things like when he's talking about responsible fatherhood, that has a huge impact on these communities, wherever they are in the United States. When he's talking about things like making sure we turn off our kids' TV sets and take away the video games, make sure they learn, that also has an impact. There are still differences. You know, what Stephen talked about, the minimum wage, that is certainly one of the differences out there. But on issues like the earned income tax credit, on issues like making sure that we address the values, the part of what keeps people trapped in a cycle of poverty, all of those things are very much part of how we're going to fight poverty. One of the big differences that's still there is the question about to what extent government has a role in making sure that we're spurring the industries of the future that are going to be able to be the places where we're going to be having entry-level jobs for people who can't find that work. And as this economy gets worse, as we are going to be seeing higher unemployment, the idea that we're going to have to be creating the jobs of the future, providing incentives from the bottom up for small businesses and entrepreneurs to be creating those positions is going to be very much part of this big debate.
And Stephen Moore, now I'm on the John McCain official website, And on his issue page, there is no separate category for poverty. Should we take that as a sign that either McCain or the Republican Party are not as concerned about issues of poverty, or that they don't see it as, you know, something to break out as a separate topic for some reason? Or how should I interpret the lack of a poverty stance?
I think that the way to interpret it is that traditional free market conservatives like myself, and I think John McCain would fall into this category, believe that the best way to fight poverty is through a broad economic growth pro-job strategy. So I think if you were talking to John McCain right now, he would basically say, look, we have an anti-poverty program. It's by, you know, reducing taxes that that will create more jobs for the economy, that will help businesses grow. Because ultimately, if you want to fight poverty, I mean, I think we all agree we need better paying jobs. And so I think he puts this all under the rubric of economic growth and jobs.
Let's take a phone call. Mary in Jamaica, Queens. You're on WNYC. Hi, Mary.
Hi. How's everyone?
All right.
That's good. I had to unfortunately go on public assistance for the first time in my life because there was, in healthcare, there's a big problem with discrimination. And so I'm wondering what Obama or McCain will handle that in employment. But I had to go on public assistance on food stamps. And I'm telling you, I am being really pressed, as I am now a poor person. I used to be a working class person on my way to middle class, and now I am poor. So I went to the supermarkets to use these food stamps, and there are no sales whatsoever in the supermarkets. I went to like a trade fair here in Queens and Met Food and Pioneer, just regular community supermarkets, and there are no sales. So my food stamps are running out. At the same time, my food stamps are being processed late. For some reason, I spoke with the administration there. They're processing food stamp benefits late because so many people are applying because of the economic crunch and unemployment that they are taking a month longer to process people's benefits. Mm. So I don't know where people are getting the money for food when we're poor. At this point, I really don't know when we're going to break, when the poor people, like myself that I'm in now, we're going to break. Like it's going to be a point where the benefits are late, there are no sales in the supermarkets, we're getting a hard time finding employment because of so many politics in, for people that are qualified to work. When are we going to break? I haven't broken yet, thank God, but we'll see what happens.
You don't sound broken, Mary, and that's really good.
Thank you.
But let me ask you this. Besides delivering your food stamps on time, mm-hmm. what would you like to see from government at the policy level to help you and maybe people like you get by mm-hmm. and continue to be able to climb up that economic ladder? Have you thought about that?
Yes. I have. I think about it every day of how to get back into it because I know my solution at this point will be hopefully employment as I've been working for 20 years straight. And this is the first time I have been on food stamps. I've never been on public assistance. I'm not from my mother's generation. That unfortunately was not my family tradition.
So would that mean jobs, programs, or what kind of thing?
Possibly looking at the employment laws and looking at why people are losing their jobs. At this point, employers are going to start to look at any reason to fire people because of the taxes that will be coming from the new administration. They're going to be looking at reasons to just let go of people. It takes advantage of the statute of the employment law that
so among,
at will.
So among other things, you're a poor person for low taxes on business.
I'm looking at the discrimination laws. I'm looking uh-huh. at employment laws too. The employment at will statute really needs to be looked at. This
right.
is a very old statute, and it needs to be looked at again.
All right.
Employment
Mary,
at will.
Thank you very much. And let's go to Arthur in Manhattan. Arthur, you're on WNYC.
Thank you, Brian. I'm hearing a lot of abstractions from both campaigns and nothing immediate and practical. The most immediate and practical thing I'm concerned about is to preserve the health care safety net during the budget cuts that are to come because of the recession. Instead, I'm getting all sorts of talk from many sources, including Democrats. You don't have to be a right-wing Republican, to gut the Medicaid budget in New York in order to meet the budget cuts the governor
Arthur,
wants.
Thank you. You're the first person, you're the second person, I should say, not the first person to raise that today. Our guest earlier, who is using public assistance in New York to get by, talked about Andre Cherney, cuts in Medicaid that affect her ability to get dental work and other things. So are we seeing Medicaid suffer? Are we seeing the social safety net fray under the weight of other financial stresses now on the government?
That's undoubtedly happening right now. One of the things that Senator Obama announced yesterday in this economic rescue plan that he announced for average people, not just for the big financial institutions, was a special fund to be helping state and local governments, where the place where that safety net is being frayed, as Arthur just mentioned, to make sure that those types of things don't happen, an infusion of resources into those governments who have seen not only the budget cuts coming from up high, but also have seen the budget cuts happening because of loss of property taxes in a lot of places, because of foreclosures and things like that. So that's incredibly important. And the other thing that I would just mention, going back to what Mary said, I think she summed it up perfectly. You know, well, the best anti-poverty program is a job. And the other thing that Senator Obama announced yesterday, getting to specifics as Arthur was mentioning, was a $3,000 tax incentive for businesses to create jobs. For each worker they hire, a $3,000 incentive. That's really smart economics. It's worked before, and it helps put the incentives for the economic program on the right place.
All right. We're going to move on to another piece of this. I want to thank both of you, Stephen Moore from National Review and The Wall Street Journal and author of The End of Prosperity, and Andre Cherney, former senior advisor to the Kerry and Gore presidential campaigns, co-editor of Democracy, a Journal of Ideas. Thank you both very much for coming
on.
Thank
you, Brian. Thanks for having us.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC with 30 Issues in 30 Days, our presidential election series. Issue 17, Whatever Happened to Poverty as an Issue in the Campaign. And when we continue, we'll talk about the interconnectedness between American poverty and global poverty and how the candidates would address that. Stay tuned. Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and one of the things the current economic crisis has recently reminded us of is how interconnected the world is. It's kind of like the butterfly effect on financial markets. And by understanding this relationship of how small things in one country can make a large impact on another, it might be easier to put global poverty in perspective. In Sierra Leone, only 18% of people can read, 13% can get clean water in Afghanistan. And every minute, a woman dies in the developing world from treatable illness. Those of you who listen to this program regularly know that I have said many times, if journalism was really honest about leading with the most important story of the day on the front page of the newspaper, at the top of broadcast newscasts, it would always be the same thing. 20 to 30,000 children died today around the world from hunger-related causes. Most of those deaths were preventable. Imagine if 20 to 30,000 children died in 1 year from something that was new or died in 1 day. Imagine how we would twist and turn ourselves and reinvent policy all over the place to prevent it from happening again. Well, it's happening chronically around the world all the time, and we hardly ever talk about it, and they're not talking about it at all just about in the presidential campaign. So for this 30 Issues in 30 Days, Issue 17, Whatever Happened to Poverty as an Issue in the Presidential Campaign, we talk now about global poverty with Joseph Iarocci, Chief of Staff for the Relief and Development Organization, CARE. Joseph, welcome to WNYC. Hello.
Hello. How are you doing?
Good. You know, we've been talking this hour so far about American poverty, and sometimes there's a disconnect. We had a person in who calls herself, you know, low income, says she only doesn't use the word poor because she doesn't like the mindset that it implies to other people. But she's kind of getting by here, it seems, on SSI and some other benefits in the United States. When we talk about global poverty, is it a whole other thing?
It really is a whole other thing. If you think about a world with 6 billion people in it, almost half of them scratch out a life on $2 a day or less. The severity of poverty in the poorest countries, you had some statistics that told the story. It really is nothing like what we find in the United States. So in Angola, where your life expectancy, it's 40 years, or you might see a leper camp as you went down the street. In so many places, people don't have clean water and running water and will never see a toilet or an electric light bulb. So its severity is so much greater in the poorest places in the world.
How has the Bush administration done fighting global poverty? I've actually talked to many people about this, and despite all the ways that George W. Bush gets knocked, and many times rightly so for many things, it sounds like he's got a lot of respect in this area.
The Bush administration has done some good things, especially with the creating and funding the PEPFAR, HIV/AIDS work, keeping global development assistance coming from the United States at increasing levels. So done some good things.
But I definitely hear some reservation in your voice there.
Well, when you look at the across the world and you see how much more can be done, when you look at the fact that the United States spends about $50 billion a year on development assistance, you see how much more could be done. And I think that's really the point. When you look at other spending priorities, the $500-plus billion spent in the war in Iraq or some of the figures thrown out lately about the bailout, you just see that we could be doing so much more.
One of the things that I think hobbles people from getting serious about this is the enormity of the problem and the sense that anything we do is going to be a drop in the bucket. And I want to play a clip from Jeffrey Sachs, the Columbia University economist, head of the Earth Institute there, who's also a leading advocate for the Millennium Development Goals, the international effort to drastically reduce poverty and hunger and disease over the next few years. Here's Jeffrey Sachs.
With appropriate, proven, documented, scientifically based investments, it is possible to save millions of lives per year. It is possible to expand the economic opportunities and productivity of the poorest people in the world.
So he thinks it's possible. And the UN Millennium Development Goals, for people who don't know what they are, adopted in 2005, really are trying to get the richer governments in the world to take a very serious approach to combating global poverty with some very specific and very ambitious numerical goals, correct?
Correct. And Jeffrey Sachs is exactly right. This extreme poverty in the world is not something that's here forever, and it's something that if the world had the will to do away with it, it could. We have the human resources, the technological resources, and the economic resources to end extreme poverty. I think that's one thing that people do think, wow, this is something that will always be here and there's nothing I can do, but that's absolutely not true. So the first step in moving forward is to believe we can change things.
So when we get to today, and it looks like the whole industrial world has no money, how does this financial crisis affect the Millennium Development Goals?
Well, hopefully not too much at all. We can't change the course that we're on. The reasons for pursuing the Millennium Development Goals still stand. Three basic arguments. The first is the economic argument that economic growth in poor countries creates markets for U.S. goods and services, so we'd be foolish to pull back now. The argument about security is the second one, that a prosperous world is more stable and that terrorism and criminals don't thrive in prosperous places. And then finally, the moral argument, which is that America was founded on the belief that all people, not just Americans, have certain inalienable rights, and those shouldn't be subject to the vicissitudes of the market.
And so when you talk about inalienable rights, the U.S. Constitution doesn't really refer to economic rights. Are you?
I am, in the sense that the CARE believes, and just like so many nations, in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which has quite a long list of rights, things we take for granted, clean water, education, basic health care, things like that.
Now, on the difference between the two candidates, because we're having this conversation in the context of a presidential election series, and I mentioned that John McCain doesn't even have a poverty platform section on his website. Barack Obama does, but it is not only overwhelmingly, but just about solely focused on domestic poverty. Does either candidate have a platform that deals with these issues at all, to your knowledge?
Well, Senator Obama addresses the issues a bit more directly than Senator McCain. His proposal to increase funding from $25 to $50 billion. He's got a very strong focus on Africa. He is very clear about holding the government in Sudan accountable and addressing the genocide there. And then, of course, the climate change. Both candidates realize that climate change hurts the poorest of the poor, and so adaptation is important. Senator McCain addresses the issues, as I see it, a bit more indirectly. Does talk about climate change and adaptation. He does talk about agriculture and exports and exporting American technology to poor countries. But I think Senator McCain does not address it as directly as Senator Obama.
And we can take some phone calls and comments on our webpage if anybody wants to talk about global poverty as an issue in the campaign. Should it be an issue in the campaign? How much should the U.S. just take care of its own when looking at poverty? What do you think the responsibility of the United States is to help poor people around the world, either through relief or development? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or post a comment or a question to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. By the way, you said Obama's plan would increase development aid from $25 billion to $50 billion. Is that per year?
That's per year.
And I think you had said earlier that we spend $50 billion a year now, so that's not right. We spend $25
billion. $25 now. I misspoke.
Right. How do you prioritize? Because, again, I think to many people, the problem seems so enormous that it's hard to start drilling down on specifics and say, what do we do first? Do we focus on clean water? Do we focus on medicine for the sick? You know, what is really killing these 20,000 children a year?
Well, it is about prioritizing, and at CARE, our priority is women and girls, and we find that investing in women and girls, the empowerment of women and girls, is the single best investment one can make. When we look at extreme poverty, the billion people living on a dollar a day or less, two-thirds of them are women and girls. Women produce half the world's food but only own 1% of its farmland. They work twice as many hours but spend half as much time in school. So CARE, our priority, is to have programs that allow girls to get educations, to decrease maternal mortality. It's amazing, really, to think that if you're a woman, a pregnant woman dies about one every minute in poor countries. So that's our priority, and we find that it makes the best use of the dollar and the best impact of our work.
Gessner in Orange, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Yes, my comment is very simple. The government is putting money out, a whole lot of money out. I wanted to know how much it is going to reach the poor. And what I was thinking, $1 billion alone would be just sufficient to give each American $1 million each per home so they could start get their life together. So how much of all that money they're putting out is going to help the poor?
Well, that's a good question. And, you know, I've heard people just in terms of the U.S. financial crisis say instead of spending $1 trillion on bank liquidity, if we split up $1 trillion and gave equal portions to every American, then everybody would have the money to buy their own home or maybe a college education and start over from there. But with respect to his question about whether the money reaches the people, I think one of the successes of the Bush administration, tell me if you think I'm wrong, and one of the focuses of the Bush administration has been on accountability, because a lot of times when organizations like CARE and others give money to try to give money to people in poor countries, it has to go through the national governments. And, so, and too often, the national governments are corrupt, and the money does not, in fact, reach the people. And I think the Bush administration has made it a priority to, you know, keep clean government and anti-corruption efforts up front, right alongside all the dollars that are being spent. How about that issue?
I would agree with that. I think that accountability, the Bush administration has been strong on that. I think the entire donor community is increasingly interested in accountability, making sure we're getting impact from the work that we're doing. At CARE, we've always been very proud of the fact that 90% of every dollar that we raise goes to our poverty-fighting programs, and consider ourselves highly efficient in that respect. But absolutely, accountability and impact are driving all the donor community. Governmental and private.
And I want to play a clip of the musician Bono, because when we talk about, you know, the enormity of it and how this numbs people, he addresses exactly that. This is from Bono's speech in 2005, accepting the TED Prize. TED stands for Technology, Entertainment, and Design. Bono accepting the TED Prize in 2005.
Equality for Africa. That's a big, expensive idea. You see, the scale of the suffering numbs us into a kind of indifference. What on earth can we all do about this? Well, much more than we think. We can't fix every problem, but the ones we can, I want to argue we must. And because we can, we must.
It's, you know, it's brilliant, Bono, isn't it? In 26 seconds, everything that we've talked about so far, the enormity, the numbness, can't fix every problem, but you have to prioritize and figure out which ones you can. Is that CARE's approach?
Absolutely. You know, the question is, what can your listeners do? What can I do in my daily life? The first thing, I think, to Jeffrey Sachs's point, believe it can be done. That's the first thing. The second thing is to learn about the world, to learn about the problem, to pay attention to what's going on in the news, and also I think to think about it deeply. Next time your lights go out, imagine if they would never come back on again. Or the next time your toilet is broken, imagine if you would never have a toilet again. It's that kind of learning about it that's the next step, and then finally act. We have an important election coming up, lots of important elections. Vote the issues. Advocate. Join the increasing number of interconnected groups interested in this issue. Make small choices in your life. Buy fair trade coffee next time you go to Starbucks. And then finally, of course, there's always the opportunity to donate, and you can do that through CARE's website, www.care.org,
John,
and lots of other organizations.
John in Middletown, you're on WNYC. Hi, John.
Hi. My question basically is, why are we concentrating on global poverty when the United States has a major poverty problem we haven't been able to address in decades?
Right. And maybe that's why global poverty doesn't appear on either candidate's website.
Well, as we've all said, the nature of the poverty in the world is so extreme, you can't ignore it. And it does what we see in the United States really does pale in comparison to some of the places in the world. And then finally, you know, Dr. King said, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. So we can't, I think, our CARE's view is we can't just think about one place or one population, but we have to see the world connected and all of us being part of the same family.
Irene in Oakland, New Jersey. You're on WNYC. Hi, Irene.
Yeah, hi. The point I wanted to make is when we help all these other countries, and yes, we have problems in our own country, then everyone in these countries then wants a car and a television and a VCR. And doesn't that, in the end, destroy the earth?
You make them.
There's only so many resources to go around, and then there's these. The population just keeps growing and growing.
So maybe we need to scale back.
Maybe we should scale back? Yes, maybe we should scale back. But why? Just, for example, in China now, everybody wants a car, and it's heavily polluting
right,
the earth.
The march of the middle class. But there's a moral hazard there, and we just have 15 seconds left, Joe. You can't keep down other developing countries, because if they have the same consumerist lifestyle that we do, the environment will be destroyed.
Well, Brian, you know we're a long, long, long way from that, and in places where there's no clean water, no tap water, no sanitation, we're talking about getting the basic level of dignity to people who don't now have it.
I don't think the argument holds up for very long that if you give people three squares, then they're going to demand the plasma TV. So let's keep them hungry. Joseph Iorucci, Chief of Staff for CARE. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And that's it for 30 Issues in 30 Days, Issue 17, Poverty. Tomorrow, Issue 18, Affordable College, and we'll be doing it live from Hofstra University tomorrow morning, the site of tomorrow's presidential debate. See you then.